Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradari. Jaya Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradari. Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana. Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 21, entitled Conversation Between Manu and Kardama. And we're going to be reading text 52 to 54. We can read text 54 together. I'll just read the first two verses, and then we'll do the third verse all together. Nayadaratamastaya jatramani ganarpitam vispurjat chandakodando ratena trasayanagan svasanya charanachunam vepayan mandalambuva vikarshan bratim senam parjadyat asmusam iva. Tathaiva setava sarve varnashrama nibandana bhagavad rachita rajan vidyeran bhattadashubhi tadaiva setava sarve Varnashrama Nibandana Bhagavad Rachita Rajan Vidyeran Bhattadashubhi Tadaiva Setava Sarve Varnashrama Nibandana. Bhagavad Rachita Rajan. Vidyedan Bhatta Dashubihi. Na, not, yada, when, ratam, the chariot, astaya, having mounted, jaitram, victorious, mani, of jewels, gana, with clusters, arpitam, bedecked, vispurjat, twanging, chanda, a fearful sound just to punish the criminals. Kodandaha, bow, ratena, by the presence of such a chariot. Trasayan, threatening, agan, all the culprits. Svasanya, of your soldiers, charana, by the feet, chunam, trampled, vepayan, causing to tremble, mandalam, the globe, bhuvaha, of the earth, vikarshan, leading, prihatim, huge, senam, army, Paryatasi, you roam about. Amshuman, the brilliant sun. Eva, like. Tada, then. Eva, certainly. Setavaha, religious codes. Sarve, all. Varna, of varnas. Ashrama, of ashramas. Nibandana, obligations. Bhagavat, by the Lord. Rachitaha, created. Rajan, O King. Bidyaran, they would be broken. Bata, alas, dashubihi, by rogues. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. If you did not mount your victorious jeweled chariot, whose mere presence threatens culprits, if you did not produce fierce sounds by the twanging of your bow, and if you did not roam about the world like the brilliant sun, leading a huge army whose trampling feet cause the globe of the earth to tremble, then all the moral laws governing the varnas and ashrams created by the Lord himself would be broken by the rogues and rascals. Purport. It is the duty of a responsible king to protect the social and spiritual orders in human society. The spiritual orders are divided into four ashramas: brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. And the social orders, according to work and qualification, are made up of the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, the vaishyas, and the shudras. These social orders, according to the different grades of work and qualification, are described in Bhagavad Gita. Unfortunately, for want of proper protection by responsible kings, the system of social and spiritual orders has now become a hereditary caste system. But this is not the actual system. Human society means that society which is making progress towards spiritual realization. The most advanced human society was known as Arya. Arya refers to those who are advancing. So the question is, which society is advancing? Advancement does not mean creating material necessities unnecessarily and thus wasting human energy and aggravation over so-called material comforts. Real advancement is advancement towards spiritual realization. And the community which acted toward this end was known as the Aryan civilization. The intelligent men, the brahmanas, as exemplified by Kardama Muni, were engaged in advancing the spiritual cause. And kshatriyas like Emperor Svayambhuva used to rule the country and ensure that all facilities for spiritual realization were nicely provided. It is the duty of the king to travel all over the country and see that everything is in order. Indian civilization on the basis of the four varnas and ashrams deteriorated because of her dependency on foreigners or those who did not follow the civilization of Varnashram. Thus, the Varnashram system has now been degraded into the caste system. The institution of four varnas and four ashrams is confirmed herewith to be Bhagavad Rachita, which means designed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, this is also confirmed, Chaturvarnam Maya Srishtam. The Lord says that the institution of four varnas and four ashrams is created by me. Anything created by the Lord cannot be closed or covered. The divisions of varnas and ashrams will continue to exist either in the original form or degraded form. But because they are created by the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they cannot be extinguished. They are like the sun, a creation of God, and therefore will remain. Either covered by clouds or in the clear sky, the sun will continue to exist. Similarly, when the Varnashram system becomes degraded, it appears as a hereditary caste system, but in every society there's an intelligent class of men, a martial class, a mercantile class, and a laborer class. When they are regulated for cooperation among communities according to the Vedic principles, then there is peace and spiritual advancement. But when there is hatred and malpractice and mutual mistrust in the caste system, the whole system becomes degraded. And as stated herein, it creates a deplorable state. At the present moment, the entire world is in this deplorable condition because of giving rights to so many interests. This is due to the degradation of the four castes of varnas and ashramas. Om Ajnantimarandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitam Cha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees. Ask for the blessings of all the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. May our words and our consciousness be aligned with Srila Prabhupada and Guru Parampara. May Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar be pleased with devotees coming together to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. May all the devotees be benefited. Hare Krishna. So again, this is Canto 3, Chapter 21, entitled The Conversation Between Manu and Kardam. I'll read the translation again. If you did not mount your victorious jeweled chariot, whose mere presence threatens culprits, if you did not produce fierce sounds by the twanging of your bow, and if you did not roam about the world like the brilliant sun, leading a huge army whose trampling feet caused the globe of the earth to tremble, then all the moral laws governing the varnas and ashrams created by the Lord himself would be broken by the rogues and rascals. So if we remember, Vidura asked to hear more about Svayambhuvasya Manor Vamsha. He wanted to hear more about the Vamsha, the line, the lineage coming from Svayambhuva Manu. Why? Because so many great personalities and incarnations of the Lord appeared in that line. His glorious daughter Devahuti, here she'll soon be marrying Kardama Muni. And because of that union, who comes? Lord Kapila Dev. So this is also the line of Svayambhuva Manu. Then later we hear about Dhruva Maharaj, who is the son of King Uttanapad. That's also the son of Svayambhuva Manu. So Dhruva Maharaj is also in this line. Prithu Maharaj is also in this line. Priyavrata Maharaj is also in this line. So many great personalities and incarnations of the Lord. So therefore Vidura, it's no surprise, he wants to hear, tell me more about Svayambhuvasya Manor Vamsha. This line is so auspicious. And just by hearing about these personalities and these stories, we are purified. The last chapter is interesting because at the dawn of creation, Lord Brahma is born from the navel of Garbhodakashai Vishnu. And then he begins Visarga, the secondary process of creation. And it's described that he enters certain mental states, like he has a lustful thought. It's a state that he suddenly is in. And then he's focused on it, he becomes confused and bewildered, and he runs to the Lord and he asks, "What do I do?" And the Lord tells him, "Throw off that body." So it's Sridhar Swami who explains, Prabhupada in Prabhupada's purport, he quotes Sridhar Swami, said that every time Lord Brahma has some mental state or thought, it's like a body, and he has to let it go. And living beings, when he, for example, when he's in a state of thinking of something lustful, then he lets go of it, and then taking possession of that are the demons. So there's always a group of beings who then take possession of what he lets go of. And that's how the beings come about. It's a very interesting chapter. He also has thoughts of loveliness, it says. He has lovely thoughts. And then he lets it go. And then who takes? Anyone remember who takes possession of those lovely thoughts? Yes, the Gandharvas. You know, it's like a heavenly realm. They're musicians, they're artists, very lovely. So when his mind, when he's in the mental state of feeling satisfied for having accomplished his duty, he reaches that state. He's not always satisfied, Brahma. He gets frustrated at times and seeks the Lord, the Lord's guidance and blessing. But at some point, he realizes, I've accomplished now. I'm beginning to accomplish my service of creation. And he feels satisfied. And then he lets go of that. And who takes hold of it? The Manus. The Manus. And then the demigods become very, they celebrate that the Manus have now born, are now emerging from Lord Brahma. They're coming. So that state of being satisfied, having accomplished his duty, is represented by these beings called the Manus. Svayambhuva Manu is the first to appear. So that says something about them. And they all have a duty. They're dutiful. Svayambhuva Manu was particularly given the service of looking over and guiding who? The human race. Us. This was especially what his service was. That's why sometimes he's called the father of mankind, and his wife, Shatarupa, is called the mother of mankind. The father and mother and leaders of mankind, human beings, all human beings. So we have this relationship with Svayambhuva Manu. He is actually, in the very beginning, he gives all the codes, the law, all the different laws of governance, of moral behavior. He gives all the details of the varna and the ashram, which we're hearing about here, the varnas and the ashrams. This is coming from Manu, Varnashram Dharma. And he doesn't just give these laws, but he makes sure that they're being preserved. So in this section today, he's traveling. He's going to different places just to make sure that Dharma is being preserved, that the varnas and ashrams are being followed nicely. And so if he has that duty to preserve Varnashram Dharma, then there's always going to be two forms that takes. One is that when he sees it being performed nicely, he gives his blessing and encouragement. And if he sees it being opposed, then he gives punishment. Therefore, this verse is describing that form of it, the punishment, the twanging bow. He's riding in a brilliant chariot. So when those who are criminals see that chariot, they become afraid. It's like when you're driving down the road and the police sirens are on behind you, right? Your heart suddenly, am I doing something wrong? Am I going past the speed limit? You get a little nervous. And that's also this bright car with these lights. It's also very flashing lights. You know, it does something. But if you know you're following everything fine, you have your registration is up to date, you have your driver's license, you're going the speed limit, then if you see a cop behind you, you think, oh, no problem, because I'm following. But those who aren't, then they may get nervous. So when Svayambhuva Manu is traveling, his radiant chariot, the twanging of his bow, the sound of his bow, then those who are opposing Dharma become afraid. So this is the, Prabhupada mentions in his purport, this is the Aryan civilization that these great kings. And this, as Svayambhuva Manu is traveling to preserve Dharma, to ensure that it's being followed nicely by all of the citizens under him, then he also takes that opportunity to visit the hermitage of Kardama Muni so that he can give his daughter, Devahuti, he can give her hand in marriage to Kardama Muni. Because he's very concerned and affectionate towards his daughter and he wants the right person. So Kardama Muni, he arrives there. He comes there to the hermitage of Kardama Muni with his wife, Shatarupa, and his daughter, Devahuti. And Devahuti had already heard about Kardama Muni and already fixed her mind on him. So this is her decision too. She wants him The father also wants it to happen. He's a qualified person. And therefore, he goes to see him at the hermitage to make the arrangements for his daughter's marriage. And the exchange between them is so wonderful. The exchange between Kardama Muni and Svayambhuva Manu. And it's really, you see the beauty of Vedic culture. They're dealing with each other so sensitively, with such respect, you know. It's really like educational to hear this conversation and to see how they deal with each other. This king comes to see a sage. How do they interact? Very enlightening. Very wonderful. You see the how refined this spiritual culture is by their exchange. Prabhupada would often quote a verse. Chatram divacham cha para paspartam. The mutual relationship between the Brahmana and the Kshatriya. It's very important, that relationship especially. It's the basis for good government. It's the basis for the well-being of all the citizens. If you have qualified Kshatriyas and qualified Brahmanas, if that's in place, then there'll be well-being for all other people. So therefore, it's nice to look at this conversation and relationship. And it's a relationship, this verse, Chatram Dvijatvam Cha Parapaspartam. The Kshatriya and the Dvijatvam, the Brahmana, twice born. Cha Parapaspartam. The basis of it is protection. They're protecting each other. They protect each other. That's what they're meant to do. The Kshatriya protects the Brahmana by giving all facilities to the Brahmana to do his work, his spiritual work. So he supports all the endeavors of the Brahmana, all the spiritual endeavors, all the spiritual activities. The Kshatriya doesn't tax the Brahmana. He's allowed to be free, and in all ways he's protecting by supporting all of the spiritual activities that the Brahmana performs. And the Brahmana protects the Kshatriya by giving transcendental knowledge, guidance, advice. Advice, because the king is ruling. The kings are good at ruling, Kshatriyas are good at ruling, but because they're primarily in the mode of passion, or passion is strong for the Kshatriya, then they sometimes can't see the far-reaching consequences of certain decisions. So the Brahmana, having very broad vision, Brahmana representing Sattvagun, their consciousness is very expansive and it sees far-reaching into the future what may happen if this takes place now. So the Brahmana would give good guidance to the kings, seeing the far-reaching implications and consequences. So, but otherwise, Kshatriya also is good at managing, good at handling people, makes good decisions. But they also always took and always wanted to take this special spiritual guidance also from the Brahmanas. So Prabhupada would often say that Brahmana means very broad-minded. Broad-minded. And Kshatriya a little more narrow because of the Rajagun. Rajagun narrows our consciousness a little. And Tamas covers it. And Sattvagun begins to, you start to see more, you start to see further down the line, further consequences of actions and so forth. This is why Prabhupada, having that very broad vision, he was so heavy with atheistic scientists. Because scientists in our present age, they also have a kind of leadership role. People are affected by them. And being atheistic, Prabhupada could see, because whatever is happening with the leaders, the common person may not know, but it trickles, their conceptions and their way of living and life and their ideas, it also trickles down into the common person's mind and heart with time. We may not know that. We may not think that we're influenced in that way. But if leaders, people we consider to be leaders, whoever that may be, by the influence, their conceptions also start to enter into our heart, and we don't even know, but we're being also affected in that way. So Prabhupada, seeing that certain scientists who have leadership roles were atheistic and would promote atheism, or just saying that You know, everything is coming from matter. Or even saying we don't know where it comes from. Both of those are dangerous with time. Because if we think, if we start to embrace that idea that at the foundation of everything, there's physical matter only, you know? If you really start, if that enters into your consciousness, then everything that's happening here in this world, there's no absolute foundation. Everything becomes relative. So it means that, yeah, you can decide to be a saint, that's nice, but you also decide to be a criminal, that's also okay. I mean, what does it matter anyway? There's no absolute goodness behind this creation. Goodness doesn't really exist. Some people may choose that, that's your opinion, do what you want, just let's try to get along best we can. So they don't see, atheists and many people don't see that this idea, the far-reaching consequences of it, is actually very, it leads to hopelessness. It leads to great pain if we really accept that at the root of everything, there is nothing. Or maybe there's a question mark at the root of everything. We don't know. That's also dangerous because that also means that what will you achieve? You see, like whatever you believe to be the origin of creation affects whatever you'll be able to achieve in life. Because if you think, like some philosophers would say, well, human, what is a human being? What is our origin? We're simply rational animals. We're like animals. Yeah, that's true. But we're rational. So that's what I believe to be our origin. We're just like all the animals we see, there's also rational animals. That's the human being. If that's your conclusion, then all you could ever be and all you'll ever be is a rational animal. Why would you strive for anything else if that's inherently what you really are? So your idea of the beginning of things, the beginning of you, the beginning of creation, also has an effect on what you will strive for. So if I believe, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, that my origin, I'm actually part and parcel of God, who's all good, absolute. And I've fallen away from that consciousness, but I'm part and parcel of God, I'm the servant of God. Now, if I really embrace that, then I strive for that. I strive to be that. I strive to be the divine being that I actually am and that I've forgotten. So then those persons who embrace it and follow it, they achieve it. They achieve that realization. It's a realization. It's not just a theoretical idea. But if you say, well, I don't know where I come from and I don't know if God exists, then what will you strive for? What will you become? You just be as you are and just go on with life. And because there's a question mark in your head and you're not too sure, and so why give my life to becoming a divine being or realizing I'm a divine being if I don't really believe that's true? I'll just say I don't know it's true. So I think it was this the Russian novelist and philosopher Dostoevsky. He made a comment that atheists harbor many dangerous unfinished thoughts. Unfinished thought. It's an unfinished thought. You know, when you ask someone who's a complete materialist, well, everything they say comes from matter. Well, what is matter? Well, it's atoms. Well, what are atoms? Where do they come from? Well, subatomic atoms. Where did that come from? And then, nothing. It's not finished. I don't know. Or they could say energy. It comes from energy. Where does that come from? Okay, then at some point they just have to cut it off and stop, which means it's not a finished thought. And unfinished thoughts are dangerous. Because the mind can't, that's why we have to hear from Shastra to begin with. Because these things are all beyond our experience and perception and capacity to understand. So the Shastra is there to actually enlighten what is the real truth beyond your sense perception. But as you begin to hear from a bona fide source and begin to purify your heart and practice, then you can get the realization of the truth with time. You have to be patient. You have to be dedicated to get truth. You can't just demand it and expect you hear something and, okay, I accept it or don't accept it. It's very theoretical. So we don't just say these things are true. You know, Bhagavatam, the very first verse of the Bhagavatam tells us the source of creation. Janmad. Janmad yasya, right? The creation, the maintenance, janmad means janma adi, means the birth, means the creation of things, but adi also means the maintenance and the destruction. So, coming forth, this creation, maintenance, and destruction is coming from a certain being. He's described there as Abhigyasvarat. He is a totally independent and cognizant being. Cognizant. He has cognizance. He's conscious. A conscious, intelligent, independent being sends forth the creation, maintenance, and destruction. So that is the source of things. And then that verse also ends by saying, Dhamna, what I have this verse here? I sometimes forget the... This is so nice. Well, what is your conception of the origin of things? Very first verse of Bhagavatam has everything. Janmad yasya tonvayati taratas chatishva bigyasvarat. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muyanti yatsuraya. Tejo varimridam yata vinamayo yatra trisago misha. Damna svena sadana rastaku kam satyam param dimahi. So, from whom this creation, maintenance, and destruction? It comes forth from Abhigyasvarat, the independent, supreme, cognizant person. And what is it then? What is this? What is matter? We can ask, right, a scientist or a materialist, what is matter? They can't really answer it, actually. They'll start to say some words, and then it stops. They'll go smaller and smaller, subatomic, protons, electrons, and then what is it? Something. We don't know. But Bhagavatam is giving. What is matter? So this part of the verse that says, anvayat itaratas, that means, so God creates these things, but he's also directly the ingredients that are there. He is everything directly and indirectly. So the term for this in Sanskrit is upadan karan. He's the ingredient cause of the world, which means he's the ingredients of it. You know, it's like if someone's going to build a house, you have an architect, comes up with the plan and wills it. He wills it. So God does that. He also has a plan and he wills it. By his will, it is accomplished. But then when you think of the ingredients of the house, you know, wood, glass, steel, that has nothing to do with the architect. But with creation, it's actually God emanating from him. His energy comes from him. It's also non-different from him. So he actually is the creation as well. So that is what. So what is matter? It is actually an energy of God directly coming from him in the very beginning. So that first verse also says that tene brahma. Brahma here means the Vedas. Hirdi ya adikavaye. The sound, transcendental sound, then entered into the heart of Brahma, Lord Brahma. Adikavaye, the original poet. Kavaye sometimes means poet or... and that's what that signifies, is that one has to now, this original Shabda Brahma, this spiritual sound, has to come to us in disciplic succession, coming from Lord Brahma, or if it's coming from another personality that Krishna empowers. You know, there are four bona fide sampradayas. And if it doesn't come in that parampara, muyanti yat suraya, then even if you're a demigod, you'll be bewildered as to what is actually going on, where this creation has come from, what is everything. So what to speak of scientists, even the demigods, if they don't receive the knowledge from parampara, then they will also be muyanti, bewildered. So anyway, this is like our answer. First verse of Bhagavatam. It gives a very comprehensive, deep answer to the question of what is this creation? Where is it all coming from? It's not an unfinished thought. We haven't concluded. This is where it starts. And therefore, because this is where it starts, everything that follows can also be properly understood. But we look at matter, we work backwards and try to guess at what the source of that is, and then what gets smaller and smaller, and then we have a big question mark at the end. And that conception hurts and harms people eventually. Because to say that the source of everything is nothing or some accident, there's no meaning in your life anymore. There's no striving. There's no realization of who you truly are. It's just an acceptance that I don't know. So we should boldly accept Bhagavatam, and in that way we'll all be benefited and we'll be able to achieve what's being offered. Realization that I'm the eternal servant of God, the loving servant of God. I have an eternal relationship with God, the source of everything. That is wonderful. So, that was just a comment on this idea of a brahmana having very broad vision and being able to see further back and further ahead because of a certain purified consciousness. Whereas that purified consciousness is not there, then we cut everything off. We don't know what's behind us. We don't know what's in front of us. And therefore, we come to wrong conclusions, harmful conclusions. Another nice verse I wanted to quote here. So the varnas and the ashrams. Svayambhuva Manu is traveling to make sure that this is being nicely preserved by the people. So the brahmanas guiding the Kshatriyas go around to make sure everybody is doing their duty. So what's the science behind that? Why is that so beneficial? We could think about it and come to some understanding. Obviously, if everybody is doing the duty, a place that they fit in a certain place in society, and they're all doing their duty, that will create social stability, right? It also creates personal stability. If you find out what you're meant to do and then do it and dedicate yourself to it, you find the right fit for yourself in life and do it nicely with integrity and honesty, you also become stable. And that's very important. Why? Because that stability eventually will lead to a very conducive situation where you can take to bhakti, to pure devotion to God. That's why. This is why Varnashram Dharma is important. It creates a favorable situation within society, but also within your own consciousness. You're setting yourself up for a gradual process to take place where bhakti becomes a little easier. So what is that process? This is actually described. This is a verse I want to quote from. This is two chapters ahead, and this verse is from Devahuti, who were. This is coming from her realization. And it's a verse that tells us the science of this Varnashram Dharma. Why did the brahmanas lead the Kshatriyas and encourage them to then also go around like Svayambhuva Manu is here doing and making sure everybody is doing their own work and duty? So here's the verse. This is 3rd canto, 23rd chapter, text 56. Neha yat karma dharmaya na viragaya kalpate na tirta padasevaya Jivan api mrito hisa. So this verse takes us step by step, starting with doing your work, your duty. If a person does their duty in life, their prescribed duty, we all have a certain nature, svabhava, and that leads to svakarma, a certain kind of work. So if one finds out what that is, getting guidance from others, and then begins to do that work perfectly. Perfectly doesn't mean everything is totally perfect. It means that you're doing it with honesty, integrity, you're doing it well, you're trying to do it well. Then you're doing your duty. Bhagavad Gita says there are three kinds of, there's karma, which means your prescribed duty, there's akarma, which means that person who neglects their prescribed duty. And then there's vikarma, those who go against, do the opposite of their duty, sinful acts. But if you do your work and you do it well, what does that lead to? So the very next thing in this verse I quoted is it leads to dharma. Karma, doing your work, will lead to a kind of dharmic disposition. If you do your work and do it well, you start to actually achieve a certain dharmic nature, which is noble, which is good, which is favorable for yourself and for others. You become a good example. You see someone who's dharmic, right? No matter what work they do, the work doesn't matter. But if someone does work dharmically, you feel like this is so nice. You know, we need to get things fixed sometimes. You go to someone who really knows what they're doing and they love what they're doing. Isn't that great? You know? If someone does some particular work and they do it well, and they're, you know, I met this man. He sells, well, actually, I didn't meet him, but I spoke to some family members. My work as a chaplain, giving people support at the end of life, spiritual support. So there is one man. You ever go to Gainesville and you see this vacuum store? It has some saying on the outside. You saw that place? If you're in Gainesville, there's a vacuum store. Yeah. So the owner of that, you know, passed away. He came under the hospice service that I worked for. So the owner, and I spoke to his son and things like that, and they were telling me about him, how everyone in Gainesville loved this man because he sold vacuums, but he always took care of the people. He always did his work really well. He would guarantee things. If people would have some problem, he'd take it back, have it fixed for free, send it back. So the whole community actually loved this man because he just had it, you know, people need vacuums, right, in your house. You find someone who really knows what they're talking about, who really knows what they're doing, and is also trying to really take care of you. Then he became like this famous person. So I was talking to his son and his family, and then I went to that vacuum store, and like the man working there was also telling me that he's like loved throughout this whole community as this person who just did his job really well, and everyone appreciated him. If they had any issues, they know they'd be taken care of. So this is working with a certain dharmic consciousness. So now, what does that lead to? We're going back to the same verse by Devahuti. So if you're very, very dharmic and you're doing your duty, it's less about you, it's more about your duty and doing it well. What does that lead to? This is a step where a lot of people don't take in this world. They can do their duty and be appreciated, and it kind of ends there. But actually, it's meant to lead to vairagya, that you start to become detached, because it's more of an emphasis on the action, the duty, and less about you and the results that you get from it. That's a kind of detachment. I'm detached from now. I'm detached from results. I'm detached from myself. I'm just going to do it because it should be done. It is good. It gives us a very deep state of consciousness where one becomes detached. And then what does detachment lead to? Same verse. This is all given by Devahuti, these one after the other. From karma to dharma to vairagya to bhakti. Now that you're detached, now that it's not all about you, personal ambition and your desires and the results that you get, but you've achieved a certain detachment, now you're very ripe to now surrender and serve the Lord for His pleasure. So this verse is very striking also because it says anyone who is not doing this, following this process, even though their body is moving and breathing and acting, their body is doing so many things, but actually it's a dead body if one is not in the midst of this process. So this, I'll just read the verse now. That was a little breakdown of it, but this is what Prabhupada, how he translates it. Anyone whose work is not meant to elevate him to religious life, dharma. Anyone whose religious performances do not raise him to renunciation. And anyone situated in renunciation that does not lead him to devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead must be considered dead, although he is breathing. So even Devahuti, she's so exalted, this this is her realization. She also understands how it works with the brahmanas and the kshatriyas and then making sure everyone is doing their duty. So this is her father's Manu, Swayambhuva Manu. He totally exemplifies this in all of his dealings. I could also read a little of the purport from that same verse. So again, this is 3:23:56. So Prabhupada says there, everyone is by nature inclined to some sort of work. And when that work leads one to religious life, and religious life leads one to renunciation, and renunciation leads one to devotional service, one attains the perfection of work. So it starts off with our work. What work do you have a nature to do in this world? And it doesn't matter what it is, it's how it's done. You know, you could be sitting in an office somewhere, that's okay. Do your job well, be honest, do it well. You know, be very, you know, Prabhupada was so precise and accurate, everything that he did, meticulous, he did things so nicely. That helps you achieve a certain state of consciousness. And that is setting you up to be able to serve the Lord. That's the whole, this is the whole, this was also even understood in the West at one point. If you look at Plato, they have a lot to say, Socrates, Plato, a lot to say also about government and rulership. They have a lot of things to say. And when you go deep into it, you see they're touching on a lot of Vedic principles that they also saw as very important. And they also emphasize everyone doing their duty. The government's responsibility is to make sure that everybody has good work to do and it's being done. And so here Swayambhuva Manu is also traveling, doing that. And simultaneously, he's arranging the marriage of his daughter with Kardama Muni. So I also want to just mention, as we come to the end, as I mentioned in this verse, when Swayambhuva Manu, he comes to the hermitage of Kardama Muni, also just seeing their relationship, the sensitivity and respect. Swayambhuva Manu, he offers his obeisances to Kardama Muni. And it says in a previous verse, Arhanam asamskritam, that he saw Kardama Muni to be like an unpolished gem. Because he was, you know, wearing rags, matted hair. So externally, you could say unpolished. But Swayambhuva Manu saw, but underneath, he saw that there was no lust in his face. No lust in his body. And he had also, Kardama Muni just recently had achieved the darshan of the Lord, the affectionate glance of the Lord. And so therefore, it also says that he appeared to be very healthy, even physically, even in his body. He looked very healthy because he had received the darshan of the Lord. So that's a nice point that's made there in the verse. So Swayambhuva Manu is so respectful, offers obeisances, and in return, Kardama Muni welcomes him. He gives blessings to him. He also speaks very kind words. And he speaks about Kshatra Lakshanam, the characteristics of a Kshatriya. If you want a reference for the characteristics of a Kshatriya, in Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 11th chapter, text 22, all these qualities of a Kshatriya are identified there. Shesh Prabhu must know about this verse. I've come across it, I've looked at it. But one of the qualities of the Kshatriya is Tejas, that he has great influence, radiance, influence. That is a Kshatriya's characteristic of a Kshatriya. So in these three verses today, we're hearing about that influence, that radiance. Even visibly, the chariot is very beautiful and opulent. There's a twanging bow. This is causing an influence because those who are against Dharma become fearful. There's also mentioned here in the verse the trampling feet of his soldiers. Swayambhuva Manu is traveling with an entourage and the trampling of their feet. You know, like in the military, when soldiers march, that sound, you know. So again, they can hear this sound. Here comes an army of soldiers coming with Swayambhuva Manu. And also he's described here to be brilliant like the sun. He's shining, Swayambhuva Manu, like the sun. And these verses today say, if these things weren't there, if this influence wasn't there, if Swayambhuva Manu wasn't doing this, then it says, Eva Setavaha Bidyaran Bhattadashubihi. Then certainly all the religious codes of the Varnas and the Ashrams would be broken by rogues and criminals. If he didn't come and travel in this way, in this spirit, to also even strike fear in the heart of those who oppose Dharma, then certainly all the criminals and rogues would break all these rules and it would create chaos. This is how Kardamuni glorifies Swayambhuva Manu. And Swayambhuva Manu is so humble that when he's receiving this, it's kind of a glorification of him. But what he says in response is that, thank you, my dear Kardamuni Muni, you're letting me know what is my duty as a king. He's just describing what he's doing, but he's taking it in a humble way, saying, by you speaking what a Kshatriya's characteristics are, you're reminding me of what I'm meant to do. So I offer you my humble obeisances. You're instructing me. You're instructing me to do this. So this exchange is very wonderful between a true Brahmana and a true Kshatriya. You know, Prabhupada, of course, I have this one quote from him. Prabhupada says in one place, sometimes I become very anxious and eager to start a Varnashram college. This is a conversation with Prabhupada. So many purports, we can't deny that this was so much on Prabhupada's mind and heart. So much is dedicated to Varnashram Dharma, these principles. So Prabhupada says, sometimes I become very anxious and eager to start Varnashram college. And he says, as devotees, we have nothing to do with it. But we want to see that all of society is benefited and peaceful. That is a Vaishnava. It's very interesting what he says, huh? That we are meant to create, we want to create this Varnashram college and teach and train. We have nothing to do with it because we're devotees of Krishna. So that is beyond the bodily, because Varna and Ashram has to do with the body, the physical body, and the material body and the material mind, the inclination that you have. So that's, of course, very important. But Prabhupada is saying, we don't have anything to do, but we want to see that everybody, that all people are benefited and that society becomes peaceful. Therefore, Prabhupada is almost saying, I become anxious to make sure that this happens. This is his compassion. Sarva sukino bhavantu, he quotes that verse, that let all living beings be happy. So this is the characteristic of the uttama devotee. Because they're seeing Krishna everywhere and in everyone's heart, and they really understand why people are suffering, they're seeing that as well. Prabhupada's mission was so large, so broad. Of course, Krishna consciousness, and he's given everything that's needed, but he's also thinking, but what about everyone else? Let us try to make some effort for them also so that the society can be peaceful. And we also know if the society is peaceful, people's hearts are peaceful, social stability, that gives a nice opportunity, that creates an opportunity by which bhakti can actually be understood and followed. So this was very much on Prabhupada's mind and heart. And therefore, he's saying in this conversation, sometimes I become very anxious to start this. It's such a big, you know, idea and plan. Prabhupada, as you know, Shyamasundara Prabhu said, right? His book is called, what is it called? Rhino? Chasing the Rhinos. Shoot for the Rhino, they say. So Prabhupada was like that. He had such a large vision. Again, the Brahmana's vision, the Vaishnava's vision, very large. And he's thinking about all people. Sometimes the Madhyama devotee doesn't understand the Uttama devotee. The Madhyama makes distinctions. Let's just keep our society what it is and let's not worry about others. They're actually against Krishna. Let's avoid them. But the Uttama, they sometimes may do that also if it gets very heavy and offensive. But actually, because they're seeing Krishna everywhere, they sometimes slacken some of the rules and regulations so that others can be reached also. And the Madhyama fears that sometimes. The Madhyama devotee fears that because they think, well, if we let all kinds of people into our society and temple, it'll just be a big mess. And then all these people, you know, it's like they're not following properly. And then we don't protect our pure principles. So that danger is there in the mind of the Madhyama devotee. It's also there in the mind of the Uttama devotee, but the Uttama devotee thinks, well, somehow or other, we have to let everybody in. You know? In the Vedic way, you don't even give initiation. You know, like initiation was given to Brahmanas born as Brahmanas. This is the Vaidika. Vaidika, it's also called sometimes. Vaidika, and then there's Pancharatrika. Pancharatrika makes some allowances that even if someone is not so qualified, but do it and train them to become qualified. Whereas another perspective is, no, if they're not qualified, they shouldn't get it. They shouldn't get initiation. First be qualified, have these brahminical qualities, and then you get initiated. You have to be born in a Brahmin family. But Prabhupada, you saw, he came to the West and immediately just started initiating everybody who was not qualified. And Prabhupada points out that this is because we're following Pancharatrika system also. We follow Vedic system, but also Pancharatrika system and also Bhagavat Marg. So all our information actually comes from these three sources. Vedic Dharma is like a foundational thing. Pancharatrika then gives some details of Diksha, deity worship. This is all in the realm of Pancharatrika. And then there's Bhagavat Marg, which is like pure bhakti, hearing and chanting in the association of devotees. So we have all three of these things going on at once within our tradition. And it's sometimes tough to know how to balance and some disagreements and differences, but actually they're all kind of there, and Prabhupada emphasized all of them. Somehow we have to figure out how to harmoniously connect all these things in a nice way. The foundation is Varnashram. What is your nature? It's important to know psychologically these things. And then there's a Pancharatrika system. Along with that, we have the worship of the Lord, the deity worship, the taking initiation. Even if you're maybe not fully qualified, but if you have a bona fide pure devotee, if you have a real guru, they will just give you that initiation and train you and anticipate that you will now become more serious and surrendered. And then along with those two things, hear, chant, remember the Lord always, engage in service of the spiritual master. So these are all three together. So here, especially, we're emphasizing Varnashram Dharma in this verse, but this is really the full picture of our tradition. All these things together are living together. So we'll stop here. Any thoughts, comments, reflections, questions? Hare Krishna.
A lot of information. Yes. In the beginning of the class, you said the Brahmana is supposed to teach and Kshatriya is supposed to get trained. But in Bhagavad Gita, we see Krishna did not, even though Prabhupada quoted in the purport, Chaturvarna Maya system, yeah. Guna Karma, but in his practical life, Krishna didn't exactly do that way. Because if you look at chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita, he says, Imam Vivashyate, he's revealing to Arjuna that million years back, Vivashyan Manave Prahu, I spoke to the Vivashyan. Mm. So Krishna never teach Bhagavad Gita to a Brahmana. Mm. He's teaching Rajarshi, Imam Rajarshaya Vibhu. So in that sense, what Prabhupada did also in his movement, they are Kshatriya, whatever, fallen Kshatriya or whatever, in ISKCON, most of the devotees that join, and it became successful. Mm. If you look at to distribute Krishna consciousness through the Brahmana, I don't know. I mean, Krishna did not do it, neither he said. And he's speaking to Arjuna, he's another Kshatriya. Mm-hmm. He's not speaking to Brahmana, Dronacharya or anyone. So if you look at from I find two qualities there. Externally, they are Raja. or capacity to control or discipline others.
Yeah.
Internally, they are very controlled of their senses. Then it is effective to others. And I look at, you know, I was looking at the history one time, how Buddhism became popular because of Ashoka.
Chachri.
He was a king.
Yeah.
Any religion you go back in this, the Kshatriya, even though we say Brahmana is supposed to teach,
yeah.
Patan, Patan, Jajan, Jajan, we quote that. So I just wanted to hear from
yeah.
your angle. That's it's very unique.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, I see that Varna, we are born with one thing, and we get trained is another thing. We are not born with ashram. Nobody's born with ashram. I was doing little research on this. We are born with Varna. This is 18 chapter, 60 verse. He says, Svabhavajena kanteya nivaddhaseena karmana kartum nechusi janmahat karishyasi avasho pita. What you are born to do, you are bound to do helplessly. I like Prabhupada's purport. He says, either you fight for Krishna or you'll fight for Maya. That's the choice you have. That's all.
Yes.
We are born with particular natures. And so I feel Varna means, in the or Ishkan, Varnasam society, the leader, they're supposed to help each citizen or each devotee by providing material needs in incomplicated according to their psychophysical nature. Then that devotee will find very gentle, sober in his life, softness, then he can take the ashram. Ashram means time-wise progression. Chant 16 rounds, this time to this time you do this, or this time you're grihastha life, then Banapas, whatever the time was, this ashram. But Varna has to be also. I don't know whether we are doing that so much. They're just going, everybody's going here, there.
Yeah.
They're frustrated. But I saw what I had in my own life. I had a craving for material success, and I did. Krishna gave me. And now I lost that. I don't regret. I feel very happy. So what you said at the end, there's actually verse spoken by Krishna in Bhagavatam. Tavat karmani kurvita navi niraveddha javata. Mat katha sravanadova saddha javanna jayate. If you have two things, then you can do bhakti very well. If you are satiated with material sense enjoyment, and you are eager to hear, then you can do bhakti.
Yeah.
But very well, the class is very nice. Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu. Yeah, you know, in terms of the Kshatriyas, like you were saying, but even in those circumstances, Krishna speaking, they're getting the transcendental knowledge, right? So the Kshatriya, even like in Buddhism too, it's not that these Kshatriya leaders came up with something, but it came from somewhere. It came some kind of knowledge, and Brahman means spirit, right? So it's coming from some spiritual source and knowledge. So even though the Brahmana doesn't looks like they're teaching all the Kshatriyas, but still we can say, well, Krishna then took the role of a Brahmana for Arjuna and began to teach him transcendental knowledge, right? They're sitting there talking, right? So in the Bhagavad Gita, so he's giving it. It's almost like he's taking that. He's the giver, and Arjuna's the receiver. And so even the Kshatriyas get things done. That's why when they get in contact with a true religious person or tradition, then they make it happen. They can then do it. That's their strength. But they're always getting it from something, somewhere, and that's kind of the Brahminical role. So whether it comes from them directly or from just a tradition that they embrace, they're also getting that fulfilled. Yeah, that's what I would say to that. But yes, Prabhu.
Hari Bol, very nice. So we have to remember this conversation is taking place at the beginning of Satyoga, of the first Satyoga, of the first day of Brahma. If society was not fully established, because creation has been taking place, that's how.
Yeah.
But the duty of the king, like Manu's, Kardam is telling Manu really, one of the duty of the king, he has to protect society.
Yeah.
And he has to see that the varnas and the ashram and everything function properly. See, there's, But the role of the king is also to protect everyone. If that protection is not there, then society collapses or it becomes wayward like that, really. But anyhow, Srila Prabhupada, within his purport, focused on the Varnashram issue. And then he says at the end of, well, later on, it becomes distorted into the caste system, you know, and then instead of the Varnashram being established in consciousness, it being established by birth and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So these things. Another point I'd like to bring out is when you were talking about the scientists and think just quickly, really, the atheists. And it's stated that of the top scientists, 85% of them are actually atheists, you know? So imagine what it'd be. 85% of the top scientists are atheists, you see? And so, but imagine what they're bringing to the world, because everything, you know, everything has an atheistic connotation, and they're teaching the world, just like what you were saying.
Yes, bro.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't think anybody's listening to the scientists anymore. I mean, they're not listening to them anymore. I mean, they don't do the... Well, you have to get off the internet, and they won't bother you so much.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki.